Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is October 24th, 2017, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Stop in the Name of Love. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Anthony Crocco. Anthony is a pediatric emergency physician and is the medical director and division head of the Division of Pediatric Emergency at McMaster's Children's Hospital. He's also the creator of the great website, Sketchy EBM. Welcome back to the SGEM, Anthony.
It's great to be back as always, Ken. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Now, we debated the theme music for this episode. I suggested, pour some sugar on me, or, whoa, sweet child of mine. But you thought, stop, in the name of love, was a better choice. Why is that?
Well, you know what? I really liked your initial thoughts on the music for this, and we are talking about sweet solutions. But I think there's a greater message with this research paper that we're reviewing this week. And I think that the stop in the name of love is really going to be key to this message.
Well, you know, Anthony, when somebody yells stop, I never know if it's in the name of love, it's hammer time, or if I should collaborate and listen. But you're saying this time we should stop. In the name of love. Is that right?
That's totally right. Although I will say that it's also good for us to collaborate and listen. I think there's some really good messages from today's podcast. But for sure, let's stop in the name of love.
And because you practice in McMaster, which is in Hamilton, it's always hammer time for you.
Oh, yeah. I live and breathe hammer time.
All right. Well, it's been a while since you've been on the show. Actually, I looked back and it was SGEM number 171. What's been happening in the sketchy EBM world?
Well, you know what? I haven't put out much in the sketchy EBM world in a long while. I have an 11-month-old son at home right now, and he takes up a lot of my time. I'm trying to do 10 out of 10 parenting, and so my wife and I are dedicating most of our efforts to that. I am doing a bit of sketchy EBM stuff for administrative purposes, so coming out with some quality and safety videos for my local institution and using the sketchy EBM kind of milieu to do that. But I'm hoping to get back on track with sketchy EBM sometime in the future, maybe when my son turns 20. I don't know.
Well, it's great to be back together today and recording this episode, but we did have the pleasure of getting together actually in person a couple of days ago.
Yeah, it was really great to see you and your family and, you know, to see part of the celebrations around the debunking some of the medical myths that some of the celebrities will put forward. So I think that was a great venue for that discussion.
Well, if you missed it, we hosted our first ever SGEM live event with superhero of science, Dr. Jennifer Gunter. And she talked about why she blogs on women's health issues and other important science. And you can view that 30-minute video on the SGEM Facebook page. We did it at the uber secret location of the Bat Cave. And SGEMers, let me know what you thought about this Facebook Live event. And if you want to see more of these, I always appreciate the feedback. Anthony, give us the case for today's podcast.
So today's case is a 12-day-old girl who presents with fever, but is otherwise well. You're planning to begin a full septic workup, including some painful procedures that include blood work. You wonder whether there's a way to mitigate the painful experience for the child.
Painful procedures are common in the neonatal period, including blood work, lumbar punctures, and bladder catheterization.
There is evolving evidence pointing to long-term neurodevelopmental harms associated with pain in preterm infants.
And we've covered pain a number of times on the SGEM. One aspect is the lack of pain control, referred to as oligoanalgesia. There are certain patient populations who are at risk for inadequate pain management.
The pediatric age group represents one of the populations at risk for oligoanalgesia. There are many ways to address pain in pediatric patients, both pharmacologic and non-pharmacologic. Just to remind everyone of one medication not to use in children under 12 years of age, codeine. That can be a killer.
Now, you did a Ranthony on pediatric pain control, and one of the interesting treatments was sucrose.
Yes, in that rant, I relied on a Cochrane systematic review by Stevens that was done in 2013 and a randomized controlled trial by Gray done in 2015. Stevens and colleagues updated their review in 2016 and concluded, quote, sucrose is effective for reducing procedural pain and no serious side effects or harms have been documented with this intervention.
So what's the clinical question, or in this case, questions we're going to try to answer?
The first is, what is the current evidence for the use of sucrose in neonatal infants undergoing painful procedures? The second is, using a cumulative meta-analysis, when did the evidence for the use of sucrose become statistically significant?
And what's the reference, Anthony?
Today we're looking at Harrison et al., Sweet Solutions to Reduce Procedural Pain in Neonates, a meta-analysis that was found in Pediatrics 2017.
Let's run through that, Pico. What was the population?
Randomized or quasi-randomized controlled trials of neonates.
And the exclusions were?
They excluded non-neonatal patients, the inability to extract data from the study or from the author, or untranslatable data.
And what was the intervention?
The intervention was sucrose, glucose, or other sweet solutions orally.
And what did they compare it to?
They compared it to no treatment, water, pacifier, swaddling positioning, skin-to-skin care, formula feeding, express breast milk, breastfeeding, sensorial saturation, or topical anesthetics.
And what was their outcome?
So it was unclear if they really had a primary and secondary outcome. What they said the aim of the article was to do was to review what is known about the mechanism of sucrose-induced analgesia, highlight existing evidence, knowledge gaps, and current controversies, and provide directions for future research and practice.
So the author's conclusions were, quote, evidence of sweet taste analgesia in neonates has existed since the first published trials, yet placebo, no treatment, control trials have continued to be conducted. Further neonatal pain studies need to select more ethically responsible control groups, end of quote. Let's run through the quality checklist for therapeutic systematic reviews. The first question is, the clinical question, is it sensible and answerable?
Yes.
The search for studies, was it detailed and exhaustive?
No.
The primary studies, were they of high methodological quality?
No.
The assessment of the studies were reproducible?
Unsure.
The outcomes were clinically relevant?
Yes, they were.
There was low statistical heterogeneity for the primary outcomes.
Unsure.
The treatment effect was large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant.
Yes, it was.
All right, let's run through those key results. They found over 150 published studies looking at the topic of using sweet-tasting solutions for analgesia and inducing calm in neonates. What did they find, Anthony?
Almost all of the studies that they looked at reported less pain in infants up to 12 months using sweet solutions.
And how does this sweet solution work?
It's a good question. No one really knows exactly how these sweet solutions work.
And who knew?
Almost everyone knows that they work, and it's routinely recommended. In fact, at our site, we have a nurse-initiated directive that they can just use sweet solutions during painful procedures.
And when did they know?
The CMA that the authors performed showed that from the early 2000s, sweet solutions work and high-quality systematic reviews on sucrose had been done and recommendations incorporated into international consensus statements. Despite the established science demonstrating the benefits of using sucrose for painful procedures in this population, 125 of the 168 studies included in this review were after 2002.
So what needs to happen now?
We need to stop doing unethical trials using placebo or no treatment, asking the question, does sucrose work? We know that it works.
Okay, Anthony, talk nerdy to me.
Well, Ken, there were your typical 5 points we wanted to discuss about this article. The first was around search strategy. The search strategy used in the systematic review was to include all the articles found in the other two systematic reviews performed previously, then search the literature from those dates forward. This assumes that the searches done in the other two systematic reviews were exhaustive. As well, the authors do not describe how the gray literature was searched.
The second point is about risk of bias. Although the authors of this study stated, quote, risk of bias was overall low for most studies, end of quote, they are in fact only referring to the new studies they found from 2011 to 2015 and are not all the studies included in their narrative or cumulative meta-analysis. Upon reviewing the risk of bias from the Stevens systematic review, the studies they included did in fact have significant risk of bias. The data from the other included systematic review by Bueno had only 6 out of 38 studies described as low risk for bias.
Our third point had to do with heterogeneity. the statistical heterogeneity was variable, depending on the comparisons examined. This is not clear from the current study, but requires reviewing the other two systematic reviews data.
The fourth point is about the cumulative meta-analysis. There's great value in thinking about what the CMA in this case means. Since 2000, it has been shown a statistically significant benefit to sucrose for painful procedures in newborns. Given that absence of equipoise between sucrose and placebo or no treatment, it has been arguably unethical since 2000 to perform further studies on sucrose where the control group has been placebo or no treatment. Equipoise in study groups is essential to ensure ethical research. It appears in this case, given that there have been ongoing studies on this topic, knowledge translation on equipoise, ethics, and sucrose has been compromised.
Our fifth point had to do with outcomes. It appears in this case that the primary purpose of this paper was to establish a timeline around the understanding of the utility of sweet solutions for pain in newborns. The authors state their primary aim was to update the previously published reviews. If this were in fact the case, I would have expected more details on the methodology of this process. For example, what outcome measures were they looking to include? A search independent of the previous systematic review's work, a good gray literature search, and a comprehensive review of all the included papers, not just the newly found ones.
All right, that's it for nerdiness. Let's talk about the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusions.
Although the authors cut some corners on their methodology, their conclusions are sound. Newborns undergoing painful procedures should have their pain minimized with sweet solutions. Further research should focus on optimizing this therapy. Any further research using placebo or no treatment is unethical and should not be performed.
So then give us an SGEM bottom line.
Our SGEM bottom line, you get two for the price of one today. The first is, from a clinical standpoint, if you're doing painful procedures in newborns, use a sweet solution to minimize their pain experience. Our second bottom line is that if you're a researcher doing research on sucrose, please do not have your comparison groups get placebo or no treatment. It's unethical at this point. It is a good idea to start looking at how we can optimize sucrose or sweet solutions, but we should not be exposing children to painful procedures without some sort of sweet solution at this point.
All right, can you give us a case resolution?
So in this case, prior to performing the blood work, catheter urine, and lumbar puncture, the child is given sucrose. Although there is some crying noted, the child appears mostly comfortable during this process.
And how about the clinical application?
So for newborns experiencing painful procedures, sweet solutions like sucrose should be given to minimize the pain experience.
What are you going to tell the patient, or in this case, their family or caregivers?
I tell the families that we're going to use sucrose to minimize the pain their baby will experience. I often tell them it's like giving them the world's best piece of chocolate before poking them with a needle. They might be so distracted by the delicious chocolate that they won't feel the pain as much. In this case, we're using sucrose instead of chocolate.
All right, the Keener contest. Last week's winner was Noel Blanco, a captain in the U.S. Army. He knew the Earth's atmosphere contains about 21% oxygen. What's the Keener question this week, Anthony?
What is sucrose broken down into?
If you know the answer to this sweet Keener question, then send an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Now, there is some other FOMED resources available on the topic of pediatric pain, and I'll list those in the show notes. Thanks for coming back on the SGEM, Anthony.
It was great to have another session with you here, Ken. Thank you for having me on.
Now, when are you going to film or record another Ranthony on fasting before pediatric procedural sedation? And I understand people will not like you when you're hangry.
You know what, Ken? I've actually got this one all written out and ready to go. I just got to figure out a time and a place to get it filmed, and I'll have it online.
Sweet. Let's get that done. Until then, can you give us the SGEM tagline?
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next time. Stop.